My guest on Simply Folk did not bring any instruments with him, and he's not going to sing, I don't think. But he will be sharing some very special music with us, and that's music that was collected in Wisconsin and the Upper Midwest in the early part of the last century by Alan Lomax and others. James P. Leary is a professor of Scandinavian studies and a professor in the Department of Comparative Literature and Folklore Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and he's also a co-founder of the Center for the Study of Upper Midwestern Cultures. And he has recently published a wonderful multimedia project. It's a book with five CDs and a DVD. It's called Folk Songs of Another America, and it is just rich and fascinating. Welcome, Jim.
I'm delighted to be here, Stephanie.
Oh, I've been delving into this project, and it is enormous.
Yeah, it is. About many years of my life going down the rabbit hole.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the book itself is a tome. I mean, it's a few inches thick, and it has five CDs and something like, what, 175 or 200 recordings?
175, but then on the film, there are about a dozen more songs that aren't on the CDs, but they're on the DVD.
So. Wow. And there are a lot of great historic photos in the book, and you've written really wonderful and clarifying liner notes, basically, about each of the tracks.
Yeah, it was a big challenge, and I had a lot of help because there are 25 languages here. So there's Oneida and Lithuanian and the Loish dialect of Scots Gaelic and Quebecois French and you name it. So I had to work with people who were expert at those languages so they could set down what was actually being sung. There's no text, obviously. They had to listen to the recordings, and then they came up with translations, and then I did the work of trying to find background about the songs, and we knew a little about the performers from some of the field workers, but most of them we didn't know very much about. So thanks to search engines of various kinds and local history collections and actually knowing some of the descendants or some of the people themselves, I was able to track down quite a bit.
Well, what I noticed even, one of the first couple of songs, there's a lumberjack song that uses some terminology. Now, this one is in English, but you still had to have footnotes with explanations of, you know, what's the scaler and what do these words mean?
The goad stick.
Yeah, right. Right. So, boy, it's very clarifying and edifying, and it makes the music enjoyable because you know what's being sung.
Well, I hope so. That was certainly what I was getting after.
Well, why don't we go straight to a recording and take an excerpt so we can start listening to some of the music. And the first one we're going to hear is a logging ballad, right?
Yes, it is. This is Robert Walker with Lost Jimmy Whalen, and he sings very much in an Irish style, and this is based on a true tragedy in Ontario, and then this song circulated around a lot in the woods. When he sings it, he does some Irish pronunciation, arums for arms and relums, and then he speaks the last line, which is a kind of a typical way to close the song. But Robert Walker, a great singer and old logger.
We'll hear an excerpt from this.
You've got a good start now. Now, she'll give you a signal to start. Start over.
As slowly and sadly I strayed by the river, hey, watching the sunbeams as evening drew nigh, as onward I rambled, I spied a fair damsel. She was weeping and wailing with many a sigh, sighing for one who is now lying lonely, sighing for one whom no mortal can save, for the dark rolling waters flow sadly around him, as onward.
It does sound like something you'd hear in the UK.
Yeah. Well, the Irish style really became the prominent English language woods style for narrative singing all across from the Maritimes of Canada and Maine across through the Great Lakes states. So it's, yeah, it's very much a, and the, it's an old Irish tune, so it's very much a, I wouldn't say UK, I'm an Irish American.
Well, all right. So. You're right. I shouldn't say UK. That's a little too broad, but yeah. Well, and that's one thing I noticed as I was kind of sampling this. So there are quite a few tunes that have made their way across the Atlantic.
Absolutely. There are lots of beautiful tunes, and it's so great that they were not only sustained by these singers, but also captured at a wonderful moment by the field workers.
And let's talk about the field workers. Of course, Alan Lomax is probably the best known of the three.
He's very well known, and he's sort of the middle person in this trilogy. And what we just heard was recorded by Sidney Robertson, who was raised in a well-to-do family out in the Bay Area of California, and had some influence from Charles Seeger, and was kind of disgusted with herself for being a wealthy person during the Depression, and actually found work in a settlement school in New York City, and was later hired for the Farm Security Administration, Resettlement Administration, by Charles Seeger, who felt like people who were down and out during the Depression needed to have their songs valued for raising their spirits. And so she was stationed here in Wisconsin for a while, and just to kind of give you an idea of the lack of total vision of folk song scholars at the time, she knew there were Kentucks up around Anago and Crandon, so she went up there searching for them, and she found them, and they did some wonderful singing, but she had no idea that there was much of anything else. And the singer, the person who set up the recording by Robert Walker, was a guy named Ward Ford, who was an amazing singer in his own right. She met him at the local welfare office where he was working as a clerk, and he could guide her then to some Kentuckian singers, but he also knew some lumberjack singers. And he was too modest to reveal at first that he was an amazing singer himself.
These stories are fascinating, and it sounds like she sort of went from this very wealthy upbringing to being a very progressive, almost rebellious, egalitarian. She wanted to make sure that all of these voices were heard.
Absolutely, she's someone who's not that well known, but deserves to be much better known, and it's really an admirable person. And actually, after leaving Wisconsin, she went out to her home in Northern California, and she really did what was later being done here, recorded the songs of all kinds of ethnic groups in the Northern California area. But, as a single woman, she went up into these wild lumber camp songs around about and made these recordings. It was kind of astonishing.
That's pretty brave.
Yeah,
some of the songs are a little bawdy, and the men have been up there for a long time, and I can't imagine traipsing into a logging camp and trying to set up your recording equipment. I bet she was, she probably encountered a little bit of...
She was spunky, and but I think they were gentlemanly as well, because they recognized that she wasn't a sporting woman, for example.
Well, that's an interesting euphemism. I haven't heard that in a while. Well, why don't we hear one more that she recorded? And this is another logging one. It's called Little Brown Bulls. I fell in love with this story.
Yeah, it's a great song. And actually, as far as we know, this was actually composed up around Ladysmith, maybe around the 1870s. And it's a contest between two skidding crews to really see who can get the most board feet cut and hauled out. And each person is proud of their own crew. And the contract calls for them to do big logs. It's a 3 to the 1,000. So 3 logs have to make 1,000 board feet. So this is pretty big timber.
Huge stuff.
Around.
Yeah. And the little brown bulls are what are being bet against the big spotted steers, which are the ones that they all are used to. Yeah.
That's right.
Let's hear a little bit of this.
Not a man on the river had McCluskey to fear as he swung his gourd stick o'er the big spotted steers. Young, strong, quick, and handsome, girded 8'3", said McCluskey, the Scotsman, they're the laddies for me. Then up came Bull Gordon when the rollway was full and shouted, "Wah, hush," to the little brown bull. Short-legged and shaggy, girded 6 foot and nine. Two lights at McCluskey to handle our pines. Now it's 3 to 1,000, our contracted call. The skidding was good and the timber was tall. Said Sandy to Gordon to make the day full. I'll skid 2 to 1 of your little brown bulls. I know, said Bull Gordon, that you cannot do. Although your big steers are the pets of the crew, I'll tell you, my boy, you'll have your hands full if you skid one more log than the little brown bulls. Now a day was appointed, and soon it drew nigh.
And well, the way it comes out is that, of course, the little brown bulls far surpass the big spotted steers.
That's right. Yes, indeed.
It's a very satisfying song.
Yeah, it's delightful. They had songs about people dying miserably in the woods, but they also had songs about triumphs and a lot of other things, too.
Yeah, daily life, really. And what a gift that these are preserved and available. And I have to ask how you got involved in this whole field. What was your impetus for this?
Well, I was lucky, I guess, but I was born and raised in Rice Lake up in northwest Wisconsin, and my folks were journalists, and my dad had grown up in that town and had an understanding of all the different indigenous and immigrant groups there, and of course I grew up with people from a lot of different backgrounds, so I was fascinated by that. And my parents loved different kinds of music, and you couldn't help but hearing it on the radio or at a wedding or some kind of event. Even out at the ski lodge, there was a guy who played Slovenian style piano accordion. So I just liked all of that stuff, and in the Carnegie Library I found at some point, a little album called Folk Music from Wisconsin that was recorded for the Library of Congress. And lo and behold, one of the people on it was Otto Rindlisbacher, who ran the Buckhorn Tavern, a kind of classic up north museum bar right on the main street in Rice Lake. An astonishing place to go into. He was a taxidermist, and so he made like tall tail animals, like the fur herring and the dingbat, sort of a horned owl, and they were in there along with other stuffed creatures.
With the regular ones.
Yeah, but he was an amazing musician. So that kind of got me started, and later I found you could study folklore, and then later I found where some of these recordings were and that there were more of them, and then bit by bit, I even discovered people who had made some of those recordings in addition to Rindlisbacher. And at some point in the 70s, I started to dream about trying to make more of this stuff available. And actually, it was Judy Rose, who used to do Simply Folk, who had that vision too, because she did a wonderful 13-part series called the Wisconsin Patchwork. And Dave Peterson of Extension here hired me to write notes for a cassette reissue of that. And he had real tape copies of all the Midwestern Library of Congress recordings deposited at the Mills Music Library, where Stratman Thomas is one of the people who did the recordings papers were. So I started to stick my nose into that.
And so as a researcher and a scholar, you were probably in hog heaven over there at Mills.
Yeah, I sure was. It's still one of my favorite places to be, and we're actually building collections of this kind of stuff all the time.
Yeah, it's exciting and it's wonderful. Well, we talked about the fact that you have nearly 200 recordings with this publication, but you had something like 2,000 choose from.
Yes, I did. And so I did a lot of listening. And I tried to choose ones that spanned the range of cultures and languages and instrumentations and styles, but I also wanted performances that were representative and that were, powerful, and also wanted ones that were reasonably well recorded. And of course, these were done with portable disc cutting equipment, and it was quite a challenge then to work with audio engineers who did a lot of the sound restoration and the original or the initial digital transfer, and then some even needed speed correction because they were recorded at variable speed, so we had to try to get what we knew was someone's normal speaking voice and kind of get a read on that, and then kind of calibrate pretty much, you know, by listening to adjust a track. So it was a major
a lot of behind the scenes technical work has gone into this. Well, you talked about getting a wide range of music, and you talked about Otto Rindlisbacher and his establishment. But he was also a musician, and his wife was a musician, and she played something that's called the Viking cello.
Yeah, it's one of these kind of hilarious made-up names. Sometimes it's called the pitchfork cello, but that's kind of what it is. It's a pitchfork with a string on it, and then it's bowed, and it really is related to the Salmodicon, which was done in Sweden and Norway, a one-string instrument to try to get congregations to sing together a little
stay
bit.
Stay in the same key.
Yes.
Well, we've got a recording of Otto and his wife Eva, and she's playing this Viking cello. Can we hear a little bit of that? That's really lovely.
Haunting sound, yeah.
It is, and she's playing it with finesse and vibrato.
She was a very skilled player, and she and Otto were Swiss, and they're playing a Norwegian tune. There were a lot of Norwegians in Rice Lake, and they played with Norwegian musicians, and then this Seder Jenten's Sontag, it refers to herd girls, women going to the high pastures in Norway with the cattle when the pastures are rich to milk them and make cheese and so forth. But it was composed by Ole Bull, who was a prominent Norwegian composer who spent a lot of time in Madison. He married a woman from Madison, and he actually played a concert in the Capitol Rotunda to raise money so that the library could buy books for the new Scandinavian Studies department here at the university. So they're interesting kinds of
I had no idea. I know we do play his music on our classical program, so it's nice to hear a little bit of the cross-pollination there. You are no stranger to WPR. You mentioned Judy Rose and the programs that she's done. Well, you've also done some work for us in the past.
Yeah, back in the late 1980s, Rick March, who's still doing an online through Monona, a version of Down Home Dairyland, he and I produced a number of shows. Tom Martin Erickson and Judy Rose gave us half an hour in studio time, and we did 13 Down Home Dairyland shows. Travel with your cheesehead guides on sonic explorations from Detroit to the Dakotas, from Chicago to Shawamigan, and even beyond, you know. And they were a lot of fun. And so we did them on and off for about 7 years, the two of us. And then Rick did them for a while himself. And recently he's kind of taken them all up again. So they were great fun, yeah.
Did you incorporate any of this kind of music in the shows?
Yeah, we did. And we did our own field recordings, and then we did commercial recordings and various field recordings. We also got stuff, both the field and commercial recordings, old 78s out of the Mills Music Library. And we even had a feature where we used echoey voices, and it was sort of like, from the vaults. and we had a creaky door, and I'd be coming up from the Mills Music Library, you know, which is in the basement of Memorial Library, with something valuable from the vaults.
They do have a lot of vinyl and 78s down there. It is a treasure trove. You mentioned that some of the songs that you selected were collected by Alan Lomax, and he wanted to come out and do, you know, a lot of song hunting in our area, but he ended up mostly in Michigan, it sounds like.
Yeah, he was a person of great energy and vision, and he conceived of traveling through all of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, recording all of the folk music in 3 months. And he made elaborate plans, and he made maps of where the various ethnic groups and occupational groups were, and he had a few contacts in advance, and he set out. But he really got hung up in the UP, and he spent a lot of time with French Canadians and Finns in particular, and he made some astonishing recordings there. But he knew that there was more to be done, so he actually wrote to the School of Music here to see if anyone would take up the work. And fortunately, Helene Stratman Thomas, who at the time was an instructor, did it, and she made wonderful recordings.
She really did. Let's hear one that Alan Lomax, you know, I've read so much about him, and you think of him in his car by himself with all his gear in the back and just going fearlessly from place to place. And one that we have queued up is in both French and English. And there's quite a few of these throughout your collection.
Yeah, there are a number of mixed language kinds of songs or songs sung in English with a few words from another language and in a kind of a dialect. So, it shows that there's a lot of cultural mixing around and changing. So while people did bring songs over here, they also mixed around with the new place and made up new songs, too.
This one is both French and English. It's called I Went to Marquette.
I went to Marquette, à mon panier de sous mon bras. On my way, j'ai rencontré la fille de l'avocat. Oh, I love you, un homme meilleur. Oh, I love you, un homme mais pas. I bought some apples, pour petit narapas. I bought a dozen, pour pas vous les faire. Oh, I love you, un homme meilleur. Oh, I love you, un homme mais pas. I bought some apples, see.
That one was recorded in Michigan. It's just charming.
It really is. It's a wonderful song. And actually, there was a French-speaking Belgian singer named Alfred Vandertuy from Algoma, Wisconsin, who sang a version of this same song.
Oh, no kidding.
As well. And it's... I think it's also on the collection.
So it must have been popular throughout French-speaking.
It's known in Canada. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it got into this neck of the woods.
Boy, just the rich ethnic influences that you had to choose from. We have so many, from the Walloons to the Lithuanians and the Croatians and the Serbs and everything in between. I was really, you know, you hear about it and we play it from time to time on Simply Folk, but to see it all at once, all of these nationalities, all of these immigrants, the Italians, the Poles, the Germans, it's astounding, really.
It is astounding. And, you know, my hometown, Rice Lake, I mean, there were Ojibwe or Chippewa people there, but there were French Canadians, Irish, English, Norwegian, Swedes, Danes, Finns, Italians, Czechs, Poles, probably some Germans. So I grew up with a lot of that, and there were different kinds of food and different ways of talking. And, of course, my dad grew up with more of it. He was born in 1922. But I think for a lot of people in Wisconsin back in the day, depending on where you were, all this stuff was happening. And it's kind of forgotten, I think. And so
it is. Yeah. I mean, we have these pockets. I know New Glarus has been very active at keeping the Swiss traditions alive, and the Welsh have their annual hymn sing and things like that. So there are a few pockets here and there, and you hope that the next generations are learning the music. But what you've done here is really give a foothold to all of these different nationalities and the descendants in Wisconsin and beyond.
Well, and that was a big goal of the thing, because previously only English language material from this work had been issued, and it doesn't really give the whole picture, and the whole picture is really amazing.
Much richer when you include the non-English language and stuff. Yeah, yeah. We have some music by a fellow named Fred Carrier, and this is a recording that was made by Alan Lomax on his swing through Michigan that sounds very reminiscent of the murder ballads that you hear, except he's made up all his own words.
I think. You know, it's funny. Fred Carrier, he sang a lot of French songs, but his mother was Irish, and so he sang a lot of songs in English as well. And he claims that he composed this song, and I kind of thought that he did based on traditional models until just 2 days ago, because I read an online blog from someone from the UK who said that Sam Larner, the great English fisherman and singer, sang a version of this that I haven't heard called The Ghost Ship. And so I'm going to have to track that down and listen to Sam Larner.
You know, you get all these in your head. And let's hear a little excerpt of this one.
This song was composed by Fred Carrier. It was in old Western, in old Western shores, there lived a young damsel so handsome and fair. She was courted by a young man who called her his dear, and was known as a trader, a ship carpenter. The king wanted seamen to go upon sea. What caused this young damsel to sob and to say?
Well, he ends up killing her and burying her, and then she appears on his ship.
That's right, and then he gets it.
Yes, he does, he does. And that's not an unfamiliar storyline. So.
No, in fact, the name he gives it, Pretty Polly, is better known as that, you know, Polly, Pretty Polly, come go along with me, where she's lured out to be murdered by her lover.
Right, right. Well, and I imagine there are probably a few versions of that floating around.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you mentioned Native American, which is such an important part of our heritage and our history here in Wisconsin and in the upper Midwest. Were they recorded at powwows, at dances, at...
There were different situations. Alan Lomax recorded a great... Ojibwe fiddler named Joe Cloud on the Bad River Reservation in Odena. And I don't know exactly the circumstances of recording, but Helene Stratman Thomas went to the Wisconsin Dells and made recordings there. The Stan Rock ceremonial that Ho-Chunk put on, used to be known as Winnebago, began in the 1920s. So this was a place, you know, where they could hang out. And years ago, I was able to talk with a guy named Ken Funmaker Senior, who was an amazing singer of the big drum. His sons now have the Wisconsin Dells Singers drum group. And he was there at that recording session in 1946 in the Dells. He said it was right out in the open. But Stratman Thomas also knew about Oneidas, who were Methodists and Episcopals up in the Green Bay area. And there she went up to some church services, and then later made some recordings in homes, I think.
We've got one of those. I wouldn't have a clue how to pronounce the name of the piece. Do you know how?
Yeah, it's called Jatgato.
And this is another circumstance of the cross-pollination. We have Oneidas that have been indoctrinated into Christianity and are now singing hymns, basically, in their own language.
Right,
though.
And the really interesting thing in addition is that these two singers had gone to the Hampton Institute in Virginia, which was set up to educate former slaves. And, of course, that's where the African-American quartet song style was kind of formulated there and at Fisk University in Nashville. And so they're singing as a duet, but more or less with those kind of quartet and almost like shape note arrangements. So it's really cool.
Jatgato's
It is very much like shape note singing. Yeah, beautiful harmony.
It really is.
In the Oneida language.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It's wild. And there was a lot of harmony singing through your recordings, which is nice.
Yes. Italians, Welsh, Lithuanians, Poles, lots of people. It's very, very interesting to listen to.
Well, you just think that, before TVs and DVDs and all that sort of stuff, people sat around in their living room or around the campfire and sang.
While milking, there was a fellow named Sylvester Rommel who I actually got to meet. He was recorded in 1938, but he said that in the country when they used to go on a walk to someone else's place or to work or something like that, they would sing as they walked along the dirt road, and so people did it.
Been doing that for centuries. Yeah.
What
yeah.
an idea.
Yeah. Well, and you think of marching songs and traveler songs just to keep you motivated and going at the right speed. Yeah. These recordings really kind of lay fallow for a long time, didn't they? I mean, some of them have not been accessible to the public, or they've been, you'd have to go to the Library of Congress, is that right?
For some of them, yes. A few years ago, the Mills Music Library took the Stratman Thomas recordings, and they actually put them up online. So if people want to listen to that full collection of 700 songs and tunes, of which I've got about maybe 90 or so in this, they can Google Wisconsin Folk Song Collections and search that. But as a result of this project, the Library of Congress decided to work with all of Alan Lomax's Michigan recordings. And as of the past year, they're all up online. And some of Sidney Robertson's are, but that's just been recently done, and you know, the idea is to repatriate this music and try to get people not only to listen to it again, but maybe to sing some of these songs again. Yeah.
And we were talking about all the different nationalities, and there is one beautiful, another one with harmonies, this Welsh love song.
Yeah, this is great. I like the they really perform it with a vengeance in a way. They're having a lot of fun.
And it's a little risque.
It's a little risque. Yeah, you'll have to pick up a copy and see the lyrics. But
unless you know Welsh,
right? But there's a leader and a chorus, and in my notes, I kind of guessed at who this might be. There's a photo of a prominent Welsh Gymanfogani or Songfest leader named John Williams, but John Williams is one of those names where there are hundreds and hundreds of John Williams, so we don't know for sure, but it sure is a great performance.
It's the leader and the chorus, and the translation of the song is Dear Janie. Oh, the Welsh love to sing, and they do it well.
Absolutely. Yeah, and this is, I really love what the sound engineer did with this, because you can hear all of the voices. The sound is really good for an old recording.
I don't know how you could have chosen among all of the recordings that you had to choose from. What was your, did you have a curating process?
It was sort of me listening to them over and over again and kind of saying, well, that one has to be in. And then, you know, at some point there's a limit. So I had to leave out some stuff that I probably would have liked to put in. But I kind of did it myself. But then I sent it out to people who knew these languages, and you know, I never had anyone who said, "This is a terrible song," or anything like that. You know, people were just kind of thrilled with it. So,
yeah, it's just staggering, the scope of the project. It really is. It's really admirable. We talked a little bit about the Swiss in Greene County and New Glarus, and there's some in Monroe as well. And you've got a really interesting recording of a zither player.
Yeah, yeah. This is Al Mueller, who grew up in New Glarus. His folks were Swiss immigrants, and he took zither lessons from an older lady at a young person. And pretty soon, you know, he learned all he could. But this was one of the first recordings that Stratman Thomas made. He went kind of zipped down there. And by that time, Al was already starting to go over to Milwaukee, where he ended up living most of his life. He created an electric zither. So he painted it with gilt paint. He used to play at this restaurant called the Golden Zither in Milwaukee. And he played in a number of other bands, and I was lucky to record him on a German music research project in the mid-1980s. I recorded him playing over in Milwaukee in an Austrian Schrammelmusik little quartet. Wonderful, wonderful player.
So in this recording that we're going to hear, is he playing the electric zither?
No, this
would have been before.
Yeah,
didn't sound like it to me. It's called a Landjäger, or a gamekeeper, or huntsman. Swiss music on the zither.
Oh, I know. And I love the way he's accompanying, he's playing two parts and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
My foot was tapping already. Oh, it's wonderful. Just wonderful. Well, are you going to take a little rest now? Are you, do you have more projects?
I have more projects. Yeah. I'm actually working with the granddaughter of a guy named Franz Rickaby, who did the first really good collection of lumberjack folk songs. He didn't make recordings, but he transcribed them and actually found out information about the songs and the singers and published this Ballads and Songs of the Shanty Boy in 1926. And we're doing a new edition with a biography by his granddaughter, Gretchen Dykstra, who actually is a UW graduate. And then I've done annotations of additional songs from the region that also have Ho-Chunk and Norwegian and German songs from manuscripts of Rickaby's that are in the Mills Music Library. So that's next. We're kind of getting there with that.
Boy, you've got so many rich veins of material right here.
It's a lot to be done.
Oh, it's exciting. And you, I should say, have published a number of books beforehand. You've got one called Yodeling in Dairyland.
That's right. Yeah.
And So Ole Says to Lena.
Yeah, and then when Polkabilly, looking at the kind of this fusion of hillbilly music and polka music in the upper Midwest. Yeah.
Oh, it's neat stuff. And it's so special for our state. It really is. It makes it what it is. Jim, thank you very much for joining us here on Simply Folk. And we would love to hear from you for all of your projects. Next time you've got something in the hopper, please let me know.
Well, thank you. I will. It's a pleasure to be here.
We have one more song. We're going to hear the whole thing. And it was just one of these lighthearted pieces that really made me laugh.
Yeah, this is Marvin Fenema. And he was a music student here. And Helene Stratman Thomas was taught in the music school of music. And she was brilliant at sharing her project with her students, and many of them themselves or their parents or grandparents or their neighbors knew a lot of traditional songs. So some of her best singers came out of these contacts that she generated coming out of the classroom.
This one translates to Billy Goat.
My father kocht een bakkie, en een bakkie zonder staart. Hij ging ermee uit wandelen, al in de Kalverstraat. Daar kwamen twee agenten, en die namen het bakkie mee. En vader begon te huilen, en het bakkie huilde mee. Bakkie, 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 bè, bè, bè. Bakkie, 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 bè, bè, bè.
You could hear the laughter at the end of the recording, too.
Oh, it sounds like they all had fun, all of these wonderful folk collectors, song collectors, going out and really getting a feel of the spirit of the music. And now it's here for us to enjoy, thanks to you.
Well, I'm delighted to have helped.
Much appreciated. My guest on Simply Folk has been Jim Leary, and the new publication we're talking about is called Folk Songs of Another America, Field Recordings from the Upper Midwest, 1937 to 1946. 5 CDs and a DVD and loads of great information. Thank you so much, Jim.
I'm delighted. Thanks.